Affairs Division. Good morning. And the first bill up today, House File 2645, Representative Foss.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. The bill that we have before us, so I'll give a brief description of it. And I'll have Mayor Collins.
Excuse me, Representative Faust. We probably should move the bill before the committee.
Okay. I'll let you do that.
Representative Faust, I'll move your bill. I move that House File 2645 be moved before the committee and be recommended to pass and return to Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Policy Committee. And, okay, Representative Faust, go ahead.
All right. Thank you again. I will give a brief description of the bill, and then I'll turn it over to Colonel Eric Allness to describe the program that we are talking about. This is something that isn't currently done in Minnesota, so not many people have a very good understanding of what the challenge program is. What the bill is doing is basically just asking the National Guard to figure out where would make the most sense to do this program if we decided to do it, and how much it would cost both to start the program as well as to run the program going forward. The reason for that is we want to know before we decide to do something what it will cost, and so this is the best way to do that. There are several locations that we've identified as possible sites, so we want to figure out what makes the most sense. So with that, I'll turn it over to Colonel Allness and let him describe the program, and then I'll fill in any holes that we have left over in the end.
Okay, thank you, and welcome to the committee. Colonel Allness, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Allness for Department of Military Affairs, and I applaud the approach that the legislature has taken to look at this potential program because it is a relatively expensive program. It would obligate the state to an ongoing fiscal obligation, so looking into making sure what's the right fit for this, and if this program is the right fit for Minnesota, I think it's a very good approach. The challenge program has been implemented in 27 states throughout the country and is quite successful in some states. The program provides federal funding at a 60-40 split for the program, which is significant, but as I said, it does require a significant state commitment. The total cost of this program is about $4 million a year, or $4 million annually, so the state split is about $1.5 million. A little bit of a background on this. The challenge program is a residential military academy type program that lasts 5.5 months long. They conduct two sessions a year, and the program hosts 100 students at a time. It's a co-educational program, although obviously the male and female barracks are separate, and a lot of the activities they do separate, but they do come together for classes and so forth. The program begins with about a two-week boot camp experience, and they usually start with about 200 potential youth during that time. There's a 50% attrition rate nationwide as you look at this during that first two-week period as the kids kind of sort out whether they're going to be committed to making a change or if they'd rather go back and be sentenced and take their whatever the judge would have set as the alternate sentencing for this. And then thereafter, as they go through the military academy setting or school setting, then there's about a 5% attrition during the balance of a five-month program. Minnesota currently conducts a challenge program, but not the National Guard challenge program through the Department of Corrections. And the current program is not running at capacity. And part of the report that we've developed in conjunction with the Department of Corrections is information on this program as well, so we'll be able to look at what they are doing. And also I've been talking with representatives from the Department of Corrections who will also be very involved with this program. In any event, we'd look at the Department of Corrections as being a partner and potentially a lead agency for implementing any programs due to their over a decade experience in this program in administering and developing expertise. And finally, the Minnesota National Guard did do a shadow program, a job shadow program at Camp Ripley a number of years ago with troubled youth, but it was suspended due to lack of participants. As part of the report, we'll conduct an analysis of this program, determine why the youth were not referred to the program by judges in significant numbers to make sure that something like this won't be repeated if we went forward with the challenge program. So we'll try to look in the past, we'll look with our partners, and we'll look at what is called for in this report to make sure that we provide the legislature very knowledgeable information.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Colonel Allness. Representative Faust.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members. You do have this pamphlet, and if you look inside here, you see a couple important factors. One is that 73% of the people that are the students that are in this program do get a GED or a high school diploma. This program is designed for 16 to 18-year-olds that have dropped out of school, and so it really is the cover of this as their second chance. There's a lot of success stories that could be told about this, but one that I will share with you is there was one individual that got into this program after dropping out of school, went through this, got their GED, went on to high school, and is now a brain surgeon. And so, you know, there's a lot of talent out there that we need to harness and just get turned back the right direction. So it really is about second chances, and rather than somebody spending time in prison or their whole life and, you know, bouncing around, really not having much of a future, it really does give them a chance to become a productive member of society. And so that's what I like about it, and I think it's a good program. That's all I've got. Like I say, there is really no cost to this. The National Guard will be the ones doing the study on this and report back to us hopefully a year from now.
Okay, thank you, Representative Faust. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Faust, I guess, coming from a military background, having been through boot camp and having served when we had, you know, troubled people inside the military and had numerous programs to get rid of them, because the old saying was you spend 90% of your time on 10% of the bad apples. I understand the importance of a disciplined lifestyle to kind of overcome those corrections. Some of the concerns I've got, number one, this is a veterans committee. I'm not sure why it's in front of us as a veterans committee if it's a military issue. But the other would be Department of Corrections. How much have they got, how much skin have they got in the game in this? And I guess the other question as well is Minnesota's kind of renowned for a lot of youth build, a lot of projects that we have put for troubled youth out here. And this is yet another program. And so I'm wondering if you can, number one, answer how much Department of Corrections is putting towards their program, and number two, how many other programs do we have that are similar to this that are not related to the National Guard?
I guess to answer the first question, the Department of Corrections really has no skin in this game at all. It could be used by them if they wanted to use it, but it is has been originally designed and used as not a Department of Corrections program. And the second question is what other programs are there that are comparable to this? Colonel Olmos might have a better idea of that than I do, because I really don't know of any that are similar to this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Faust, with all due respect, I think if this is your bill, you ought to know how many other programs you're going to be competing with this, because you've got some troubled youth out there, and this is not a Walmart where you go down to the blue light special, pick out somebody that you think is going to be able to do the job. We have budget constraints here. I guess the other issue is, when I say the corrections, how much skin do they got in the game? Obviously, as Colonel Almas had said, they have a program that's not at full capacity. How much do they pay annually for that program?
I guess I would ask Colonel Almas to respond to that question as to how much they pay for that program.
Colonel,
but that is a little bit different program, and that is youth that have been sent there by judges. Typically, this program is not students that are there sent by judges; they're there voluntarily. So that is what makes this program different than other programs. So I don't see that we are really competing with other programs with this, because it is significantly different than other programs.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel Olmos, didn't you say in your statement that this was dependent on judges, whether there was a penalty or not, because it's an all-volunteer program, they'd have to weigh whether or not the penalty would be worse than the sticking it out for the duration of the interment, let's say.
Colonel Olmos.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson. I talked specifically about the job shadow program that we had in the past, and that one there was by referral of judges. And the current program for the challenge program, I have to admit, I don't know the specifics of how that's implemented, so I'll have to find out that information and get back to you on that. One of your previous questions was on the funding, and what we would do regardless of how we implement this is we'd look at doing this in partnership with the Department of Corrections. We understand that they are the experts, they're the agency that run this type of program or used to working with this. So we'd make sure in anything we do that we're working hand in hand with them to make sure that we don't go off and distract from what our main mission is.
Anything further, Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess to that point, here we are in the midst of a mobilization, and I have had my son mobilized twice with the National Guard, and we've got others who are kicking in here, and we have got our plate full just with trying to keep the breach filled. And I guess I would discourage further burdens upon our National Guard in terms of peripheral programs and focus on the issue at hand, which is winning the war on terror here. So I guess I would, Mr. Chair, I'd like to modify that motion to move this bill over to veterans, over to military affairs, or what is the next committee?
It has to go back to
Ag policy without recommendation.
That is a motion. You are making that motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is to move it to this bill to agriculture, rural economies, and veterans affairs policy without recommendation. Representative Bigel.
One clarifying question, Mr. Chair, is do we know if that's Representative O'Trip?
Right.
Is it from there, would we go to finance, then ag finance, to be laid over for consideration in some sort of omnibus bill that Chair Junky and Chair O'Tremble would have?
Actually, this bill...
Or are you going on your own? I'm sorry, maybe I should ask the author of the bill.
As far as I know, it would go on its own, although this doesn't have a financial implication, so I don't believe that it would have to be part of the finance committee bill.
Okay.
Excuse me, I have to double check this for sure, but I believe Representative Kahn wants to see this in state government finance, and that is, unless he changes his mind, that's probably where it would go from the policy committee.
Okay, so policy committee to Kahn committee, and then so Kahn would lay it over for consideration into any omnibus bill?
That would be up to the chair and the committee, yes.
Okay.
That is true also, thank you. Public safety may also want to see the bill, but we'll have to follow that through as it goes. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the financial obligation is $1.5 million from the state and $2.5 million from the feds. And I'm still confused where the talent pool is coming from. You keep saying it's not anything to do with people coming here because of a judge, but you also talk about the Department of Corrections. Where do these kids come from?
We do have a motion before us. We probably could vote on it.
You're right. I'm sorry.
To the motion?
To the motion, yeah. I have some of the same concerns. I've spent many days at McCoy and Ripley, and I've seen programs for youth at these facilities, and I doubt if they were run through the National Guard, but they were programs, and there were students, there were young people that have correctional problems and so forth, and I'm just wondering how of these 26 states that are supposedly running this program, how many of those are run through the National Guards of those states, and so I think we need to take a better, closer look at this.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My intent was not to stifle debate on this issue. My intent was just to modify the motion to send it without recommendation. So if we impede that, I'll withdraw my motion.
Any other comments on the motion? We're on the motion. Okay, we'll take the vote. All in favor of the motion to modify the original motion to send
without recommendation.
Send without recommendation the bill to the policy committee. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries. Okay. Yes, we'll continue to be. Actually, I have... Can you wait a minute? I have a list going here.
Yeah, okay.
Representative.
I'm at the bottom of the list.
Yeah. Thank you. Representability.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson covered most of what I was asking, kind of around the edges, but the very plain question, what will we get with this program that we are not getting with any existing programs? And that's about as plain as I can make.
To answer the question, I'll give you what I know about the program. And the program, where it's been running, they've been taking kids that have already dropped out of alternative programs. Schools have the alternative program in school, and kids that have dropped out of that are the kind of kids that they attract into this program. 76% of those kids then end up with their GED or high school diploma. Basically, you know, I mean, practically none of them would have gotten that without this program. And so it really is getting them back into becoming productive members of society is what this is after. There's a young man that I coached in baseball many years ago, and there's a cute story I could tell about him, but we won't take the time for that. But right now I see him, and he just walks around town. He's 19, 20 years old. When I talk to him, he says, yeah, I'm looking for a job. But he's not looking very hard. He's not a productive member of society. And you know, I don't know, maybe someday someone will walk up to him and offer him a job. But the rest of his life, he's just going to wander around like that. He's the perfect person to fit into this program. And he's the kind of guy that needs some discipline and structure in his life. And if he had the opportunity to go into a program like this, he could, again, become a productive member of society. That's what this program is about. That's what this program is trying to do. But I do want to go back to the cost of this program. It's because this bill is not saying we're spending the money on the program. That's not what it's saying. It's saying we're going to look at options as far as where it goes, what it would cost to start, and then look at how much it would cost on an ongoing basis. And so we're not asking you to spend $1.5 or $4 million. That's not what we're asking you to do.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representability.
Do we have now numbers of how many people we think can't end up being helped anywhere else that would come here, or will those numbers come from this study?
I don't know if the numbers would come from this study, but I'll give you an example. The state of Oklahoma has one program now. They're starting another one because they have a need, and yet I believe Minnesota has a higher population than Oklahoma does. And so they're looking at expanding their programs to have two programs similar to what we're talking about, one. And so, you know, I certainly believe that there is a demand out there for it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe Colonel Alms could maybe answer this. Are those other states, I think you said 26 states, how many of those states have run it through the National Guard and is funded through the Veterans budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative,
right.
There's 27 other, when I say challenge programs, you have to if you look at the brochure, the N and the G in there would be capitalized, and that's a specific program run through the Department of Defense administered by the National Guard. So in those states, those are all National Guard administered programs. Now, a lot of the employees from that are not necessarily National Guard members. They may be former members, or they may be working from corrections or just private contractors. But the program itself is a National Guard administered program. The closest to us is in Wisconsin. And then if you kind of look at it, it kind of follows the eastern seaboard down through the southern states, generally speaking, is where you find most of them. If you look in the heart of the Midwest or the Northwest, there's not as many programs.
Any follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, a follow-up. And of those programs, it sounds like the National Guard has oversight over the programs, and the funding comes from where?
Colonel Allman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the funding comes through National Guard Bureau, from the Department of Defense through National Guard Bureau to the state. And as I said, it's about a $4 million annual cost for one program, and the state has to bear 40% of that. That's part of the agreement it goes through. We have other programs, such as the counter-drug program, and then it requires a sign-on by the state to do it, to participate in the program.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it, Representative?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got two questions, I guess. Number one, this is probably down at Camp Ripley if the study said to go forward with this. And is there room up there? There's a lot of activity up there.
If I could, there were several locations that we identified as possibilities. That was one of several that we looked at. And part of this bill is asking the National Guard to look at that as well as the other sites and determine which one would work the best. Is there a room at Camp Ripley, or are there other locations that would work better?
Okay, and my second question, Mr. Chair, was of the kids who graduate, what's the cost per kid of the ones who actually graduate?
I believe that that's where the cost is, the $14,000, because the high attrition rate in the first 2 weeks is such that there's about 100 kids after that go through the rest of the program, and that's where the $14,000 per student is at that point in time. So there's two groups each year that go through the program, so there's about 200 each year that finish the program at a cost of approximately $14,000 each. There's approximately then generally about 200 drop out in the first 2 weeks, 100 in each program, and there basically is no cost to them.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Wolfslager.
Well, Chair, members, Representative Foss and Colonel, I appreciate you bringing this forward. You may know that I represent Red Wing Correctional Facility, which has juveniles. And my experience in, you know, 1 year of trying to go to as many meetings as I can there, I find out that when we take a lot of the negative factors away, we have kids fighting for A's at Red Wing Correctional Facility. And so I've heard one wonderful story after another at the Red Wing Correctional Facility of young men who have turned their lives around. Now, to your point, I guess, Representative Severson, there certainly are some young men at Red Wing Correctional Facility that are not going to be of the caliber that you're looking for. And they do have some serious special ed situations, and they're just not the caliber that the colonel would be looking for. But there are other young men that do turn their lives around, and I've looked at their charts from their teachers, and they are scoring off the charts in terms of being really fine young men. So, you know, I guess that's what I see as a benefit, is that certainly, there are going to be some that are going to be great, and there's going to be some that aren't. So, I mean, if we can help them through this program, then I'm for it.
All right, thank you. Anything further? Any members? Representative Fowles, anything follow up or?
I really don't. I believe there's somebody else here that does want to testify on this bill.
Okay.
We should let them have a chance.
All right, whoever wants to say a few words, come on down.
Okay. Oh, maybe he was taking a different bill. So,
all right.
I guess not. I guess my final comments would be that, like I've said before, we're not asking to start the program. We're asking to do a study on the program to determine what it costs, where it should be located, and so that we can take a look at the program a year or two or three years from now, whenever we want to, whenever we financially can afford to do it. It's all about second chances. And these are second chances that were given to students and children that probably would not have those chances otherwise. And I think that that's an important thing. And if you look at the cost of sending somebody to prison, and you look at that for a year or two, if one of these, you know, what percentage of these students would we have to keep out of prison before this would be a very good investment? And it's not very many. And so I think that, is it a short-term huge gain? I'll give you that. There isn't. But long-term, it's the right thing to do.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fowles. I'll renew the amended motion to move House File 2645 before the committee. To move House File 2645 without recommendation to be passed and returned to the Committee on Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Policy. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, next bill up, House File. Let's take care of the minutes from the last meeting before we go to the next bill. Okay, Representative Doty, would you move the minutes from, let's see, what's the date here? Friday, February 15th. Move the approval of the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the February 15th minutes.
All right, any discussion on the minutes? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, minutes are approved. Okay, let's go to the next bill, House File 2095. Oh, maybe, well, here he is, okay. Representative Eastland. And Representative Eastland, I'll move your bill. I move House File 2095 before the committee with recommendation to be passed and returned to Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Policy. Okay, thank you for coming to the committee. Representative Eastland, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. There's a couple of things we have to do, I think, just technically before we've had this bill around for a long time, and it's just in the last year or so we've heard some recommendations from the people who understand military lingo better than I do, that we should, there's a couple things we should change in here. So would you give me the latitude to make some oral amendments, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Representative Eastland.
Okay, on line 1.11 of the bill, if we could delete the two words serving honorably and insert three words, currently serving in.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and then one additional one. On line 1.12, we would delete the word then honorably discharged and insert the words received an honorable or general discharge. So I'll read what it should look, what it should sound like, starting on line 1.11. It should read, B, a person who has relevant military experience and who is currently serving in or has received an honorable or general discharge from the military is eligible to take reciprocity examination.
Okay. I'll move the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Is it clear to everybody? Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Okay, all in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The oral amendment is adopted. Okay, thank you. And the Representative Eastland, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this bill does is simply expand something that's in current law, which gives some credit to military service where you've been involved in military police. And simply recognizes that when somebody's been in the military service and has been involved in military police work for up to 5 years, they should receive some credit for that when they come back into civilian life. And so it basically eliminates some of the requirements that are necessary from them for a veteran who has been involved in military police work to come back into civilian life and to actually enter law enforcement on the civilian side by taking away some of the requirements necessary to take the post-court test. So I'm not going to explain any more than that. I'm just going to call on Colonel Alness to maybe give us some comments. Then we have another testifier from the DEED, from the Department of Employee and Economic Development, the Veterans Division also. So I'll defer here to Colonel Alness.
Okay, thank you. Colonel Alness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although this bill does not materially apply to the National Guard, I can speak to that case of the bill of military members, and I'll speak specifically to the pretty much the oral amendments that were just made. The first part was that we're looking at what the intent of the bill was, and while people are still serving on duty, they could make application to it. So I think looking at that intent, it's pretty clear that if they're serving, we want to get them into the ability to take the exam, so that's really good. However, when it says they're serving honorably, there's really not a quantifiable way that when you're serving on active duty to say that I have honorable service. And you're serving on active duty is essentially what it is. So by removing that honorable, it takes away maybe a discrimination. Someone looking in the future would look at it and say, well, was there service? Is it honorable? And it's really not a good way to measure that. And then the second one is adding in the general discharge. And the reason that's important is that there's many people from the military who receive a general discharge, and that's not a bad thing. A lot of times, if there's a hardship in their personal circumstance, that for the good of the military and the individual, that they're discharged from service, they'll receive a general discharge. And it's not a less than honorable discharge, but it's just kind of a mechanism in place to discharge them from service for less than their full term, or maybe for some other reasons as well. So in those cases, we would prefer that they not be discriminated from being able to take this exam due to their experience. In fact, this may be an excellent venue for them to transition into civilian service. So that's why we made the recommendation that general discharge be included as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Anything, committee members? Representative Dominguez, go ahead.
Chair, on the effective date, this is July
1, 2007. Mr. Chair, the bill was introduced last year. That should also be changed.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Dominguez.
I guess it wouldn't make any difference. If we'll do an oral amendment. I'm assuming you're talking about changing it to 2008. On the motion.
Yeah, to that point, Mr. Chair, is there any problem with can this be made retroactive?
That's a good question. Mr. Chair, I mean, I did see that, and if it's something the committee desires to change, I think we could change it. I think it would basically become effective immediately then when it was passed by the, or signed by the governor, which wouldn't really make any difference. There's no cost to this. It's just a policy matter.
And, Mr. Chair, that's actually what I was really after, is to say it makes more sense, given the policy this represents, is to just say it's effective immediately. And if it's not objectionable, I'd like to move that.
And I would be fine with all of it. Can I make the suggestion that we change the wording on line 1.14, that this section become effective upon enactment?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, that will be the motion then on line, the amendment, I mean. Line 1.14, effective date, this section is effective upon enactment. Any discussion to the motion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Eastland, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have a representative from DEED here from the Veterans Division, Gary Korneman, would like to come up and...
Excuse me, just a second. I missed Representative Severson.
That's okay.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Question.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
Can I...
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Eastland, I'm looking at it. I apologize, I probably should have had some criminal service. I think in terms of general discharge, from my background, the general discharge may have been for administrative separation, in which it did not reflect the fulfillment of their obligation. Sometimes that took place because of disciplinary actions under UCMJ. Sometimes it took place because of just pregnancies or something like that, where it was at the convenience of the government to administer general discharge. My concern would be in the places those administrative separations were took place because of UCMJ, i.e., in a drug, a particular drug case where the individual had top positive for some type of illicit drug, if there was circumstances that were surrounding it, and they did not want to give it other than honorable discharge, the commander would issue a general discharge because of some pretrial agreement. So, inaccurately, we may be allowing some people who have infractions under UCMJ admitted into this program, and I don't think that's necessarily intent of this bill, but I would like to hear.
Okay, Representative Eastland.
And we did talk about that as an issue, what we need to do is understand what the bill does. What the bill does is simply allows the person, the veteran, to take the post-war test.
it does not exclude them from any of the requirements that are in place to discriminate who and who cannot be a peace officer. So if there's a drug history, if there's a criminal history, if there's any other kind of history that shows up, they're going to have to pass the same psychological test, the same background test, all of the things that anybody else is going to. So all that will show up in those proceedings. So I think what we tried to do was just simply say we can't deal with all that in this language. We're just simply saying if somebody wants to move from the military police service to the peacetime military or peacetime law enforcement, that we think we should give them some credit for what they've had. And so we've just sped up the amount of time that it takes between the time that they apply and they can take the full support test. They still have all the other requirements.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything further, committee members? Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, I have with me Mr. Korneman. I got to get that name right. He's a Norwegian, too. I kind of jokingly said that's not a Swede, and he said, well, he was close. So he's with us this morning to share some information from Deed and the Veterans Division there.
Okay, thank you and welcome. And can you identify yourself for the record? And then, please, can you spell your name for us?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this change in legislation. My name is Gary Korneman. I am a senior veterans representative with the Minnesota Department of Employment, Economic Development, Veterans Programs. I am also a Vietnam veteran who has experienced the challenge of job transition from military duty to civilian life many years ago. The past 17 years, I have been working with veterans who are in job transition. The past 2 years, I have been responsible for the Minnesota Veterans Licensure and Certification Program, which has a primary purpose of assisting recently separated military personnel who are experiencing barriers and challenges to employment because of civilian licensure and certification requirements. The program is also proactive by promoting our veterans' excellent workforce skills, training, and experience with Minnesota employers, colleges, professional associations, and state agencies. So it's my pleasure to be here and ask for your support in this change of eligibility for military personnel still on active duty. The past 2 years, I have received phone calls and emails from Minnesota soldiers stationed overseas and in other states while they were making plans to find civilian work in Minnesota. This proactive pre-planning effort on the part of our military personnel is commendable. And the accommodation proposed here is a very practical and tangible way to assist them in that effort. It should not go without saying that this kind of accommodation is also an encouragement for our soldiers to return home to Minnesota. It will help them economically with job transition, and it will put them on a level playing field with anyone else who wants to take the exam. No one else is required to first leave their current employment. That should be true for our military personnel also. It has been very encouraging to see how diligent the citizens of Minnesota, state agencies, and elected officials, as yourself, have been working to be responsive to our returning Iraqi soldiers. Our career military personnel with many years' experience are also entering civilian life and are deciding whether or not to come back to Minnesota or to maybe stay in that state where they're at that maybe is much more accommodating to them. Passage of this bill, with its change in wording, will be another great example of how we can respond to them in their transition back to civilian life and in encouraging them to come back to Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Korneman.
Korneman.
Korneman. Okay. Thank you. All right. Anything, Representative Tingle said?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Korneman, I'm wondering if you have any idea like how many people this would affect or if there's any fiscal implications for this?
I don't have any numbers. Other than, we are looking at people who are looking for a second career,
you know, they're coming out of the military. Maybe it's not 20 years, but maybe they've been in 5, 10, 15 years. And it's a very challenging transition for our military. Sometimes it's coming back and starting at square one. You know, maybe they've gone up through the ranks of the military, and now they come back to civilian life, and sometimes it's just going back to square one again. So in any way that we can help assist them, give them credit for prior learning, give them credit for their training, it's going to help them in that transition.
Follow up? Could I maybe pursue a little farther? Maybe Mr. Corman could tell us what currently is the wait if a veteran has to wait until they're discharged before they can take the test. Basically, what we're talking about is that an enlisted person can, while they are still serving, mm-hmm. can take the post-war test. It all it's doing is it's pushing the time forward. I can't see where there would be any cost here. It's just simply moving the time frame a little closer so they don't have to wait until after they're discharged and then start the process of applying for post-war tests and that sort of thing. They can do it before, so they would be ready to go to new employment almost immediately upon discharge.
Anything to add, Mr. Cormo?
No, other than the fact that you know, many of these soldiers have families, and for them to have to wait for a date after their discharge to take the post test and then possibly not pass it, you know, there's a lag time there, and there could be significant economic hardship to them just in that waiting process. But if they're planning ahead of time, 6 months, before, a year before, they can come home to Minnesota while they're on leave and take that post-exam and find out what the results are, and they're able then to make adjustments or now jump right into that whole process of becoming a police officer. So I think there is significant economic impact that could be made by allowing them to do this, you know, before they're actually out of the military.
Okay, thank you. Any follow-up? So, Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cornman, I'm just wondering, with the post-board test, and I know you're not from post, but is it typically, a couple hundred people a year that take that in our state?
You know, I did not do any research on the statistics with the post board. I know that I have actually gone and testified for the post board on issues in accommodating veterans about a year ago. So there has been interest, within that agency to make accommodation to veterans.
Any representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cornwell, good to see you. And just a comment to the committee, this is a great bill. This is kind of the process we've been working on for the last 3 to 4 years to make Minnesota a more veteran-friendly place. And Mr. Cornwell has been working with Deed to through the licensure process. You know, we've got a tremendous need for nurses in Minnesota. And yet when nurses are getting out of the military, they made a huge obstacle in Minnesota in getting some credit for their licensure and their talent and skills that they have honed sometimes on the battlefield to get that credit here in Minnesota. And so those are some of the barriers we're up against, and Deed is working on breaking down. This is one of those processes. But we have a tremendous talent pool out there that is looking for a place to have a second career. And Minnesota is finally taking a broad spectrum look and saying, we've got to cut down the barriers that are precluding them from coming to Minnesota, and that's part of this legislation. I want to thank Representative Eastland and Mr. Cornwell for working on this.
Representative Goode.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to see another piece that will make the transition easier for our people coming back. That's important. Quick question. Do we have any stand on this bill from the peace officers themselves? Any position that they've taken?
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the post board that has basically given us the green light and said this is a fine policy as far as they're concerned.
Okay, thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forgive me if I missed this, but I'm just looking at the current law here. 5 years. That actually seems like quite a long time to train before they have, I would think there's training before they have active duty military police service. And I'm wondering if there's reason to actually lower that so that somebody who hasn't quite had 5 years, but maybe 3 or 4, could also take the examination.
Representative Eastman. Mr. Chair, and maybe I can defer to Mr. Cornerman on this a little bit, but I think I would just comment that I think there is the relevant military history piece on Part A of the bill, of the amendment here, is defined other places in statute, the five-year thing. And I think that there are some significant requirements for a civilian to take the post-court test. I mean, they have to have quite a bit of training, and you can elaborate on that. And I don't think we want to get into a fist fight here about how much time is enough time. I think at this point, I think the concept of the bill is where I'm interested in going, so that we at least make the recognition that somebody that's been in the military and had a significant amount of experience there that may not translate A for A and B for B as to what a civilian is going to do, but we're at least going to recognize that, and we're going to give an opportunity to move into the private sector. So I would not be in favor of changing that. I think that's something that we should be very, very careful about and think more clearly about before we would just change it in a committee here. But that's my comment. If Mr. Cornerman wants to add to that, he can.
Mr. Cornerman.
Yes, I think I would concur with Representative Eastland on that. I have a son-in-law who's a sergeant in the police force, and he's got a four-year degree. I have a brother who's on the police force, and he has a two-year degree. And so they've taken considerable amount of time and finances and effort to qualify themselves to be on the police force. And I think that the 5 years is something could be maybe equivalent to an apprenticeship program. They maybe don't have as much schooling, but they have a tremendous amount of on-the-job training. And so what we're doing is we're just giving them credit for the experience that they have had on the job. And so I certainly don't want to take away from, you know, the sacrifices that our folks make that don't go into the military. But at the same time, I think that giving them, saying 5 years is going to give them good on-the-job training along with their education in the military to put them on par with folks that are have not gone into the military.
Okay, any follow-up, for example?
No, thank
okay.
you.
Representative Detmer.
Yes, I think, Mr. Chairman, yeah, I can agree with that, because I think if you look, most of the enlisted period is at least 6 years, and many of them go long before. By the time they get out, they're at least a sergeant or more, and many of them come back to Minnesota and join the National Guard or Army Reserve, so they'll serve in their MOS in the Guard or Reserve, and then possibly get a job with our law enforcement program. So many may be doing double duty. So I think it's a good idea. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cornerman, you took the words right out of my mouth. The OJT section, if you ever see them walk the streets of certain cities in Okinawa with the SPs and the MPs wandering around trying to hurry up. Most of the sailors who were screwing up, you know, the Marines. They've got a lot of on-the-job training that's relevant to the streets of Chicago, for instance. You know, it's a good bill.
Okay. Anything further, committee members? Oh, Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just talking with the committee administrator here, and at some point I think this bill needs to go through GovOps because it relates to the post board. I just pulled up the statutes that relate to this too, and kind of the discussion that we've been talking about that. If the person has a baccalaureate degree from an accredited college or university, and they've successfully completed a board-certified practical skills-oriented basic training course, then they're eligible to take the peace officer licensing exam. So, I mean, all of this kind of flows right with that, but I think it would be good for GovOps to see it too, since it's pretty specific to the post-board issue.
All right. Thank you, Representative Singleton. Anything else?
committee members? Anybody else here to testify on the bill? Representative Tinglesick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to see this bill here. Thank you, Representative Easton, for bringing this in. You know, as others have commented on the committee, you know, I've served on this committee 4 years now, and it's kind of amazing to me how many of our state laws are in place kind of sort of before the whole war issue. So we've never really thought through all this stuff about what's going on with the war and when people come back and trying to make that transition easier. So I'm hoping that we're getting to completion of updating our laws, because I feel like we need to do as many things as possible to really support the people that are serving in the military and to the National Guard. So thanks again, Representative Eason.
Yes, and thank you, and also thanks to all the committee members for your work getting this type of thing done. And there aren't really many veterans here today. A lot of times you see a lot of veterans, but also first, I would like for the record to say thank you to veterans too for their input on all of this. Anything further on the bill for committee members? Okay, Representative Eastland, any closing comments?
No, I think it's been said. I mean, our military personnel, I think, have been long. I mean, I grew up in the Vietnam era, and I guess what I've seen in my lifetime has been sad. So I think it's really time that we step up to the plate and recognize the sacrifices that our military people make. And this is just one small thing we can do to gesture that to them and us. So I appreciate the support.
All right. Thank you. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2095 passed with a recommendation to be passed and returned to rural to agriculture, rural economies. Excuse me. Veterans Affairs Policy Committee, as amended. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, committee chair.
Okay, Representative Bigham. Representative Bigham, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like first to apologize for my voice. I have some sort of bronchial thing, and then I woke up with an earache this morning. I just had really good luck. I'd like to move House File 3164 and with recommendation to pass.
Representative Bigham, that's House File 3161.
Oh, yeah, that one, too. 3161. to be referred to Ag Policy, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bigham moves that House File 3161 be moved before the committee with recommendation to be passed and returned to Agriculture, Rural Economy, and Veterans Affairs Policy Committee.
Yes.
And Representative Bigham, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. This bill would create a list of deceased military personnel for ceremonial and honorary purposes. The list would contain name and rank of those from Minnesota and would not be indicative of any benefits owed. It would allow for family members that if you weren't here at the time of death, if you weren't an actual resident of Minnesota at the time that you were born and raised here, that you would be recognized. And this came to fruition because I heard about my constituent story, Dee Myers here, who you'll hear from in a second, some from her story in dealing with her family. And I met with Jim Cleary, and he helped me write the bill here, and I think it's a good bill. A lot of you signed on to it. I'll put somebody from the Department of Veterans Affairs here to talk if you have any questions. Thank you. And Colonel Allmitz, too, that will go over. But I'll turn it over to Dee Myers. It is Myers. Okay, good. To tell your story.
All right. Thank you to the welcome to the committee, Ms. Myers. If you can identify yourself for the record and then go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. My name is Dawn Myers, and I'm the gold star sister of Lance Corporal Adam John Reynolds. He was killed in action February 25th, 2006, in Ramadi, Iraq. We've had an interesting family situation.
Excuse me, Ms. Myers.
Yep.
You can move up to the microphone. thank you. That's fine. Thank you.
And Adam lived here in Minnesota with me for 3 years prior to his enlistment in the Marine Corps. And my husband and I were his next of kin when he passed away. And so any lists or anything that I've seen from the media, you know, any newspaper ads or anything that's been written had a list of soldiers with strong ties to Minnesota who have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And certainly I believe my brother has strong ties to Minnesota, being that he lives here. He was born and raised in Wisconsin, and so Wisconsin kind of scooped him up as their hero, and that's fine. That makes sense to me. But being that this listed strong ties to Minnesota, I thought, well, why isn't he on it? And so started making some phone calls. Just everyone was kind of like, oh, yeah, why isn't he on it? And would pass me, well, let's talk to this person, and let's talk to this person. And it turned out that Faithful State of Press is the only people that are keeping this list. And there's real gray areas, and does Adam qualify or not to be on this list? And it just was really kind of a frustrating, embarrassing process, really, for me and my family. So that's kind of where we're at.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Myers. Representative Vega?
Yep. I'd just like to reiterate that, it's the Associated Press that keeps the list. And I just think that we should have a list here in Minnesota to honor and remember our brave men and women that come from Minnesota or that have strong ties here. And this wouldn't preclude them from being on any other list, like from Wisconsin. Especially when we have some of the border states when we're in partner up with, as far as Wisconsin and Minnesota are very close anyway. But I think that it's important to have a list to honor our military men and women that have given everything for our country. I could almost see if you wanted to add anything. And then, if you wanted to add anything, too.
All right, Colonel Allman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the first thing I want to do is confirm that is, in fact, correct, that the Associated Press is, I guess for lack of a better term, the official keeper of the list. So when we get media inquiries about how many Minnesotans have died in the current war, we have to say, well, Associated Press does this. So this bill would rectify it and provide an official record on the state's behalf on how many Minnesotans have passed away. Also, I want to comment on, I think it's very important to broadly interpret who is a Minnesotan. One thing I found, I'm very honored by the duty, but one of my less favorite jobs is that when there is a casualty, often I'm the one who's coordinating between the elected officials, letting the governor, letting the federal delegation know of the passing of the soldier in combat. And one thing we found is that every one of these family circumstances is different. We have a lot of fractured families. We have families that move around a lot, a number of parents, and all kinds of relationships. But if we broadly interpret this and make a list of trying to include people, if they grew up here, if they feel like they're a Minnesotan, I think that's very important that we include them on the list so that they feel that ownership and also feel that loss was not in vain and that those people who lost, that those people are remembered. So a broad interpretation and recognizing the family dynamics is very important to make sure that we have a good list here so we can honor those who gave their all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Colonel Allman. Any further? Oh, excuse me, Representative Denmer. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Colonel Allness. I look at that line 1-8 and 1-9. It's service-connected causes while serving the United States Armed Forces since September 11, 2001. So we're saying we're starting this list as of September 11, 2001. Is there a list of prior dates?
Representative Bagel.
Representative Detmer. No, the very correct Department of Veterans Affairs. Okay. Staff is here to clear who I want to thank for helping me on this, and really appreciate you working with me on this. Again, it's the Associated Press, and the only reason why we started was we had to pick a date, and this is a date that I felt was, you know, a good date to pick, I guess. But if you, I don't know if you have any other comments. Okay.
Any? Okay, follow up.
Well, yeah, and just follow up. I guess, you know, what is this list going to be called?
Representative Bagel.
Do you have any suggestions?
I'm just looking at the date, and you know there is, you know, the Desert Storm prior to that, and so forth, and you know when you know, those are some questions that people are probably going to ask, especially families in Minnesota. You know, if we're putting together a list of Minnesota people who have served in our armed forces and are from Minnesota, they might ask, you know, why was this particular date? So we should probably have a good reason why we picked this date versus other dates.
Thank you. Representative Bagel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer. As we go through the process, I'll work with the staff and get some feedback. But I would, any suggestion that you have, I'd appreciate it. That if you had any other suggestions to either name it, or if you have a different date that you think would work, I'd be open to doing that.
On that subject of San Diego, you know, is there some, when you've been putting this bill together, have you had some discussion on moving backwards from that date at some point? Or
It was a consideration. I mean, that's always something, Mr. Chair, that's always something we can do, too, is that this be a starting point, and then as we collect those to keep moving back, there's nothing that would preclude us from doing that. That's a very good point, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything further, Representative Detmer?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I would like to, you know, look into. I think you should probably look into that, because I know there was a list of Vietnam War casualties, and there's, you know, I'm sure there's lists out there. So maybe we could just make an all-inclusive list of Minnesota personnel.
There's nothing that would preclude us from doing that in this bill, but that was just a starting point for us.
Okay. Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, to Ms. Myers, sympathy to you. We're coming up on your two-year date here, February 25th. I know it's going to be difficult, though. Our thoughts and prayers are with you and your family, especially with your next of kin issues. I'm sure there were a lot of details. So, thank you for coming forward with this. It's always nice to be able to take something that's negative in your life and turn it into a positive so that it can be some good for other people. So thanks. I just have a couple of questions on the bill here. And actually, first of all, I just had a constituent call who was trying to put together a community service project to help the families where there's been a deceased soldier. And they're doing some scrapbooking events where they're putting together sort of memory photo albums of these people and their lives and their families as a totally free project. And you know, the woman who has coordinated expressed her frustration that there isn't a list, and she, you know, is trying to find things through Google searches and all kinds of things. But so specifically to the bill, I'm wondering about, first of all, if the federal government has anything like this. Maybe Colonel Allness knows about that.
Colonel Allness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Veterans Affairs can certainly come down and answer more completely if they have more information than I do. But typically, the information available to us is very limited due to Data Privacy Act. We don't find out about stuff unless we're directly involved in the casualty assistance process. So if there was an active duty Marine, for instance, who from Minnesota who passed away, we may not find out about it until the actual internment is announced through the media. So there is not a constructive way for us to get it. DOD does maintain the list, but I can't speak to how they distribute that out.
Okay.
CBA doesn't have that information either, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay. And then just to follow up.
Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about sort of the specifics and anything else with data privacy and some issues where maybe we're going a little bit too far with the information, especially looking at the effective date and sort of worried or curious about anti-war protesters or, you know, we have the National Republican Convention coming here in September and, you know, you would hate to have something with this where the list would be used in a negative way. And so I don't know, Representative Bigham, if you've thought through that, or, I mean, I guess, you know, with Internet and Google searches these days, you're always taking that risk, or maybe Ms. Myers would like to comment. I don't know.
Ms. Myers.
I guess as certainly we were very afraid of, you know, the negative things that, you know, the protesting and all of that was really at the height when Adam passed away, and the support and the love and the good things that have come, the tribute to the troops, recognitions, and the amazing good things that have come from people knowing our situation, it dispels any fears or any, and with any of the other Gold Star families that I've connected with, it doesn't matter. We know that they're wrong, and so yeah, there's not a lot of fear about that.
And so, Mr. Chair, I don't know. Maybe at some point, you know, as the data privacy issue that's on this, I don't know what committees this is going to, but you know, that maybe needs to be looked at a little more. And Representative Bigham, that effective date, you may want to just, you know, run that out until after the National Republican Convention this year, and just to kind of not worry about that segment. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bigham said that is probably a good point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I will definitely run it by Representative Holbrook.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay, and Representative Bigham said
one more. I'm just wondering the cost. So we're asking the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to compile and maintain the list. So with any state agency, there's some kind of cost, and I don't know if it's just a very small amount that they can fit within their budget. Or
yep, Mr. Chair, Representative Single said there is no cost to it, but if the department wanted to come down and explain, I know they've already started some stuff too, but I'll let them come and explain that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Christine Keel, Department of Veterans Affairs, we have started compiling a list not as comprehensive as what Representative Bigham has in this bill. We just have the person's name, military rank, branch of service, and Minnesota hometown. We already have someone starting this from 2001, so we don't anticipate any extra costs. He would just continue getting additional information to add to the list.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gill. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this point, I was... I'm actually of a mind that I think we should go beyond 2001. And actually, it I think lends to support addressing the concern of how the list could be used negatively. By picking that date, I think it might add credence to somebody, for somebody to use the list negatively. And the Gulf War, council is quite knowledgeable on the history of wars here. I was looking for the largest gap between the wars and between Vietnam and the Gulf War and the Gulf and what we're in right now, the War on Terror, as it's called, is right up there with the almost the same gap between World War One and World War Two. So. And being a person who grew up in the Vietnam era, knowing what the culture was like and the mistakes we made as a country, terrible mistakes we made as a country, and how we respected people who served in this way, I really want to leave you with a strong suggestion to look at going back further, and whether it go to the Gulf War conflict or all the way to Vietnam. I know at some point it becomes costly, and I'd be surprised if these lists already don't exist somewhere when you get back further.
Yep.
But I'm going to leave you
there. Representative Olson, I was just informed that the History Center keeps list of Korea in World War II.
Right.
You are correct about that. And again, Representative Olson, this is just a starting point. This is just to give direction to the commissioner of where to start. And we can move back at any, this doesn't prohibit us from moving back. That's just the starting point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Representative Bigham, would you be open to going back to, say, 1990? Which is when the Gulf War began?
Representative.
Okay, do you want to amend it to be like August 2nd, 1990, which was the start of Desert Storm?
That'd be acceptable with me.
That's fine with me, Representative Olson.
Before we move on, Ms. Keel, you don't see any significant cost within the, you could absorb that within the department, or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, since we already have a staffer from Thailand, it's just going to be part of the.
Oh, it's just the ongoing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yes. See, who are we on now? Okay, is this to the motion, Representative Detmer?
Yes, to the motion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of your motion, Representative Olson, why don't we just let it up to the department to decide, how far back they want to go, and then come up with their list. And we don't have to put a date on it. Let them decide where they want to have a starting point for this list.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson. I'm fine if we want to do something like that, but the fact is it doesn't prohibit us from going back. That is just a starting point. They can keep going. They can keep going back. If anything, Representative Olson, maybe what we should do, and I'd be more than happy to work with staff on this, is that right after, we could put in language that would say, since September 11, 2001, we should put some language in there that would say going back or compiling the information from September 11, 2001 back. Like, we could put language in there which would bring all of those military folks into one list. It just would be more stronger language that is a starting point. That's kind of, to let the Department of Veterans Affairs decide how far back they want to go, as Representative Detmer is saying. So I can work with Mr. Cleary on language to do that, and then we can amend it in the policy committee.
Representative Wardlaw, do that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That motion, I was thinking about that same thing.
Yeah.
You might, the idea that you would start small and then see how hard it is to go further. What if on... this is just a suggestion, and if you want to make it an amendment type thing, we can, but on line 1.8, after the word forces, you could say comma, I think you need the comma, starting with those who have died since September 11th, and the starting with those would imply that you could go
back
backwards from there as you see fit, and you just keep going until you think you can't do it anymore. Backwards from there, as you see fit, and you just keep going until you think you can't do it anymore.
I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Okay, actually, we do have a motion before us right now.
Mr. Chair, are you referring to my...
I'll
withdraw that, because I'm in accord with what the discussion here.
Okay, Representative Olson withdraws his motion, and now Representative Ward, are you going to go ahead and make the...
Mr. Chair, unless Mr. Cleary has a better one.
Mr. Cleary, yours is better. Okay,
then I make a motion to amend House File 3161 as follows. On line 1.8, after the word forces, comma, and then say, starting with those who have died
And then it would continue. So it would say, the whole line would say, service-connected causes while serving in the United States Armed Forces, comma, starting with those who have died since September 11th, 2001.
Okay, does everybody... Representative Dominguez, to the amendment.
To the amendment, yeah. Do we necessarily need to put a date on this? Because I was thinking something on an example of an indefinite list. That way we could go back and then we can go forward. And that way there's no list, there's no date on it at all, and they can just, you know, go as far as they want to go and go up as far as they want to go. So I just want to throw that out.
Representative Orville.
Yeah. That's a good idea, Mr. Chair. But, you know, you could put some language there, and somewhere you could put where this would be ongoing. Yeah.
Okay, Representative Olson, to the
motion. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to throw this thought out there. What got me thinking about this is the date. It draws attention to that date, and it invites taking this block or this list and using it in a negative way. And I think if we just eliminate the date and just have language I don't see them going back to where they already have lists, and I think it'd be good to include Vietnam veterans. And if we just come up with language to establish this list, and if we're going to let the commissioner decide how far back to go, if we just eliminate the date and just do this, I think they'll do a good job of it.
Representative Dominguez,
I guess you're right, Representative Olson. That's my point. If you put in a language like indefinite, you can go as far as back and again go up to as far as you want to go. So there's no date. So I guess that's my point. I think you made it a little clearer.
Okay, Representative Wardlaw.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my amendment. I can't remember if I made it or not. My motion.
Okay.
here's another suggestion. Then why not on line 1.8, after the word forces, put period, and then cross off the words on 1.8, cross off since September, and on line 1.9, cross off 11, 2001, period. And then it just says, service-connected causes while serving in the United States Armed Forces.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Bingham.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'm agreeable to that.
Mr. Cleary, did that cover our basis?
Yes, I believe so. Mr. Chairman and members, there is one related concern, and that is if you really took the bill literally, you would not only have to go back and get the Vietnam list and so on, which would be a feasible task, but it would become infeasible, I think, if you apply lines 113 to 118, where it specifies that the commissioner shall note the following information for each person. Perhaps that could read, the commissioner, to the extent that it's feasible, shall note. And I would imagine it's not feasible to try to dig out a person's unit or rank or some of these things, cause of death, for example. So along with that, along with the suggested amendment, deleting language on lines 1.8 and 1.9, one could add, to the extent feasible, after shell on line 113, 1.13, after shell, to the extent feasible, if you wish.
I would, do we have motions?
Representative Wardlaw actually has not made the motion.
We're just thinking out loud.
Yeah, okay. I would concur with that, Mr. Chair, and with what Representative Lord Lowen
okay.
Just said.
What they said.
Representative Begum.
I move what they said, Mr. Chair.
That's fine. I mean, yeah, that would probably give the commissioner, you know, cover, but again, you can't report what isn't there. And if they don't have the information, if the information isn't available, there isn't much that can be done about it. But that's fine, Mr. Clear.
Okay. Ms. Keel, from the department's point of view, it's okay.
Yes, Mr. Clear, I'd be
fine. Okay, thank you. Representative Wardlow, would you like to go ahead and make that motion, then?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I make the motion that Mr. Cleary can read to us.
Okay, Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Colonel Wardlow, the language would read, the amendment would read on line 1.13, after the word shall, insert to the extent feasible.
Okay.
Well, that's not the whole one.
And then also there's some deletion up there on lines 1.8 and 1.9.
That's right. That would be incorporated with that. On line 1.8, delete since September. And on 1.9, delete 11, 2001.
Okay. Does everybody have the language for the amendment? Okay. Any representative?
This is a bad pun, but that has been clarified. Thank you.
I'm in charge of puns.
Yes. Ms. Keel,
yes.
As far as the department absorbing the cost, that is possible. I'm assuming you just move at the rate that you could, that money's available and personnel is available, but if you'd like to comment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. As I said, we have a staff person who, this is just a part of her job to add the list of these zero casualties from the current Iraq War. This becomes part of her daily job duties.
Sure. And Ms. Keel, and then going backwards too, that would just be an ongoing process that would just keep going as time and money are available.
Yes, and since the History Center has some of these lists, like for this summer for our World War II memorial dedication, we already have the list of World War II veterans, so it's just as easy to put them on our website.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Steele.
Mr. Chair, real quick.
Representative
Baker. It should be noted that the department is in the process, and the department said they're in the process of compiling this. All that this bill does is put it in the law that they're going to do it. So they already are trying to work on compiling the list, but this, you know, puts it in statute that we're going to do this.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Okay. Are we ready to vote on the motion, then? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. And that instructed the staff. Representative Engelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps this is a question to Mr. Clary, our staff. So when it talks about on line 7 and 8 in the bill about United States Armed Forces, is that comprehensive? That includes National Guard and all branches? Is that the terminology?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Tinkleton, yeah, that's right. It includes seven units, really. The Army, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard. What am I forgetting?
Marines.
Oh, yeah, the Marines.
The ones who go first?
And the National Guard and Reserve in each of those.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Cleary. Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who and how can we get names from the AP?
Yeah.
Representative Bagel.
Mr. Chair, Carol Turma, they have it on their website.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think this needs to be incorporated at all in the bill. Luckily, or we have more funds. I work closely with the Military History Center at Ripley for many projects, and I'm carrying one that will hopefully bring money enough in to tell the stories of those who are fortunate enough to come back. I'm hoping that these lists will go there so that people doing research can find it in outstate Minnesota as well as coming down here. So put that somewhere on a to-do list, please.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bodie. And Representative... Oh, that was it. Okay. Anybody else that wants to testify on the bill? Okay. any further discussion, committee members? Okay, we're ready to vote. Representative Bigham...
I'll renew my motion.
Okay, Representative Bigham renews her motion that that House File 3161, as amended, be recommended to pass and return to Agricultural, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And Ms. Myers, to follow up on Representative Tinglestead's thoughts, I want you to know that we all appreciate, want you and your family to know that we all appreciate your brother's service and sacrifice, so thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple closing comments, if I could. I got a couple bills that I'm working on, hopefully gets before this committee next week. But one is the Veterans Preference, which talks about some of the things that we've been addressing here today. And the other one is the Korean War Veteran, which we heard last week. I've been working with Mr. Cleary on that, and that is to get us some closure to the discussions that we had last week with the Veterans with the Korean War Veteran. Yeah, and the previous bill was the Vietnam War Veteran. So. Sure. I appreciate the committee's indulgence in that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Stevenson. And as soon as we get those in as quick as we can, we'll look at them as soon as possible. So thank you. Yeah. Okay, anything further, committee members, before we adjourn? Okay, committee adjourned.